শ্রীলা গুরুদেব কি জয়, শ্রী সদ্বুজ গৌরাঙ্গদেব কি জয়, শ্রী হরিনাম প্রভু কি জয়, গ্রন্থরাজ শ্রীমদ ভাগবতম কি জয়, শ্রী ব্রহ্মস্তুতি কি জয়, শ্রী চৈতন্য ধাম কি জয়, গৌর ভক্তবৃন্দ কি জয়, গৌর প্রেমান হরি হরি ওম। সো গুড মর্নিং অল অফ ইউ, ওয়েলকাম টু অল অফ ইউ অলসো কানেক্টেড অনলাইন। And here we are in our last meeting here in Finland today, concluding our retreat in Sri Chaitanya Dham, this beautiful landing place in the Finnish archipelago, baptized by Srila Gopananda Bon Maharaj. We are hosted here by Bhrigupad Prabhu, Saragrahi Devi, and Radha, Prodo, and all the Vaishnavas who are assembled here. We had a very beautiful time. So today we will conclude our series of lectures by going once again to Brahmastuti, and we will speak on verse 24 today. But as usual, let's make a brief recap of what we saw yesterday. Verse 23, where Brahma was speaking about the many attributes of Sri Hari, and he invoked a verse in which all of the words could be connected to one or other attribute of the unlimited attributes of Sri Hari. And since he is non-different from his attributes, those words could be also be names of Krishna. Krishna's names and Krishna's attributes are non-different from Krishna. So his words indicating his attributes are words indicating his names, himself. So the verse says, "You are the one supreme soul, the primeval supreme personality, the absolute truth, self-manifested, endless, unbeginningless. You are eternal and infallible, perfect and complete, without any rival and free from all material designations. Your happiness can never be obstructed, nor have you any connection with material contamination. Indeed, you are the indestructible nectar of immortality." This was yesterday's verse, which Brahma spoke in connection, according to some acharyas, to a possible argument that, okay, Krishna's form is visible to your eyes, Brahma, so that means that his form is material, because we have generally the experience that whatever is visible is material. So, of course, Brahma will reply in this verse, making it clear, no, Krishna's form is not material. Krishna's form is endless, beginningless, and this and that, immortal, and so on. And also in the context of mentioning all these attributes, he's making a difference also between the jiva and Krishna, because the jiva shares some of the attributes we just mentioned, but not all of them, and those who are shared by the two of them are not shared even to the same degree, and so on. As we mentioned, Krishna has super sat, super chit, super ananda, super existence, super consciousness. We are conscious, but we are not omniscient. So there are degrees of being conscious, there are degrees of existing, there are degrees, his form is all-pervading, ours is not, and so on. So there's also a difference between the constitution of the jiva and that of Bhagavan. All this subtly trying to argue against Mayavad conception, which at the end we'll say everything is the absolute, you are the absolute. Also, we share some words by Jiva Goswami, where he mentioned the six stages of the body, from birth to growth, maintenance, byproducts, decay, and dissolution, and how all these different words from this verse show that Krishna does not go through any of these different stages that correspond to a material form. Again, the main argument here is Krishna's form material? It seems so. It seems so to Brahma some minutes ago. So he himself now is affirming his new discovered insight, if you will. And we concluded with Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's funny commentary. Funny in the good sense of the term. Very serious, very grave, very deep. But very charming at the same time, presenting this dialogue back and forth between Brahma and Krishna. How all of the words from the verse were transform into a Q&A in which Krishna will ask Brahma about something, in Vrajabhava, in Mukdata, in his naivete, the feeling himself, I'm just a cowherd. And Brahma's reply to each one of the questions are each one of the words from this verse. So, that said, today Brahma will, in the line of the previous verse, connection between the two, Brahma will make clear, okay, Krishna has all these attributes, his form is non-material, his form is all the things he just said, but how to grasp these attributes, how to understand them, how to achieve not only information about them, and that's the beginning point, to hear about Krishna and his attributes, but how to obtain realization of them. So in today's verse he will make that point. How to do so? The method is to hear from revelation, from Shastra, about this reality which goes beyond mind and senses, and to hear that from the lips of someone who is walking the talk. In other words, from Sri Guru. And the result of which will be, at least to begin with, transcending samsara. So let's go to today's verse. In verse 24, which will be in Indravamsa. Chanda, the meter called Indravamsa. So, I don't know how many cell phones we have today, but just in case. It's like Sarah Grace is looking for the verse. She found it. Okay, we have a second. Okay. So I'll recite it once myself fully, and then we can recite it all together.
Ivam vidham tvam sakalatmanam api svatmanam atmat maya vichakshate Guru arkalap dopani satsu chakshusa yete tarantiva bhavanritam buddhim. Evam vidham tvam sakalatmanapi svatmanam atmat mataya vichakshate Guru arkalap dopani satsu chakshusa yete tarantiva bhavanritam.
One more time.
Evam vidham tvam sakalatmanam api svatmanam atma tvamataya vichakshate gurvar kalabdo panishatsu chakshusha yete tarantiva bhavanritam burim.
Okay. So, let's go to the translation. Let me share it here also to the ones online. So, it says like this. Those who have received the perfect eye in the form of confidential knowledge obtained from the sun-like spiritual master can see you in this way as the very soul of all souls, the super soul of everyone's own self. Thus, understanding your original personality, they are able to cross over the ocean of illusory material existence. So that's today's verse. Let's briefly go through the word-by-word meaning, and then we will analyze some of the commentaries. So the first expression is Ivam Vidham, which means basically as thus described, like creating a connection with what we have been saying previously, in previous verses. Tvam refers to you, means you. Brahma referring to Krishna, you. Sakalatmanam. Sakala Atmanam means of all souls. Api, indeed. First line. Second line. Svatmanam atmatmataya vichakshate. So Svatmanam means the very soul. And Atma atmataya as the soul of souls. Or the super soul. So you are the soul of all souls. Vichakshate. They see. So he's referring to those who can see how Krishna is the soul of all souls. How? How do they see? Third line starts to reply. Guru Arka Labdu Panishat Chuchakshusa. So Guru Arka, Arka means like sun. So Guru Arka means like from a sun-like guru. Labdha, labdha means obtained, and Upanishad means Upanishad. Labdha Upanishad, or Upanishad also, as we know, means confidential knowledge, refers to some secret esoteric doctrine. Suchakshusa. Suchakshusa, with the very nice eye, if you will, with the perfected eye. Chakshusa means eye, and su means very nice eye. And last line, yete tarantiva bhavan narita ambudim. So the result of receiving this knowledge is yete. Yete means they who, those people who receive this knowledge. Taranti means they cross over. Iva means easily. And then bhava means, in this case, material existence. Anarita, which is not real, or which is temporary, as we already explained. And ambudhim, which means ocean, or the ocean. So they very easily cross the ocean of material existence, the ocean of samsara, by receiving this knowledge from the lips of Sri Guru. So let's go to the different commentaries, beginning with my Guru Maharaj's commentary on this verse, which will be included in his forthcoming book. And the commentary is called Bhaktivedanta Bhavanubad. Again, it's shorter than, at least shorter than yesterday, but longer than the first two. So he begins speaking in connection to what Brahma said in the previous verse. Remember, Brahma enumerated lots of attributes belonging to Krishna. And then now he says, and these can be understood, all these attributes can be understood, by one who learns to see the Atma and the Paramatma through the sun-like eyes of Sri Guru, who teaches the Upanishads, the result of which is crossing over the ocean of material existence. Such devotees who mix jnana with bhakti, Brahma says, attain the beatific vision of Santa Rasa. This last point is not overtly present in the verse, but will be developed by Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, especially in his commentary. So the main idea here is Brahma mentioned different attributes of the Godhead in the previous verse and verses. So the question is how to understand that, this verse saying, by hearing Shastra from the lips of Sri Guru. And the result of that proper hearing from the proper sources, transcendence of samsara. So we will see this verse will lend itself to different forms, levels of interpretation. More devotional ones, more connected with Sudha Bhakti, and more as if Rama is speaking about other practitioners of other paths. So here Brahma is speaking about how to acquire proper vision, darshana. Darshana means vision. Indeed, we sometimes hear the word, this word sudarshana, which generally we can connect that with heads falling on the ground. Krishna invokes the discs and oh, game over for the suras or something like that. But actually sudarshana means proper vision. So the idea, if you want to play it out symbolically, is an asura means someone without proper vision, who wants to enjoy without measuring consequences and any so forth. So by Krishna cutting that head, also we could say symbolically represents vision is replaced, proper vision is presented, invoked. No? Wrong vision was there, no more wrong vision, head down. The head is a problem. With the head, we see things, but generally our head gets in the way of of perceiving reality. So sudarshan means proper vision. Another way of putting the head down, not necessarily it has to be cut down, but we can put our head on the floor at the feet of Sri Guru. Jnana prayasam udapasya namanta eva, Brahma said at the beginning of the Brahma Stuti. The way to learn is put your head, offer pranam, put your head on the ground, and so much knowledge will come from that. So that's a form of sudarshan. You don't want to put your head on the ground, you say, well, we will have to put your head on the ground by force. Namaste. So if you do it voluntarily, you will acquire sudarshan. Putting head on the ground and hearing from the proper source. Now here the guru is described as giving Upanishadic knowledge. As we know, Upanishad means to sit close. That's what Guru Maharaj likes to describe. And sit close means, if I tell any of you are too far, just come here. Come. Means I'm telling you something secret, something confidential. So Upanishad makes it close. Means we are about to reveal something that is not just for massive consumption. This is more subtle, esoteric topics. So you have to pay proper attention also. That's the point. If you're, maybe you are hearing me now, I believe there is attention there. But if I tell you, I need to tell you a secret, please come here, I'm sure you will put much more attention there. If a secret is about to be disclosed, you develop like 300 years, basically. So Upanishad means that, no? Secret doctrine. Raja Vidyam, Raja Guhyam. Krishna interestingly connects these two ideas in the Gita. Knowledge and secret. And the two of them are one same thing. The king of knowledge and the king of secrets is the same thing. And that's bhakti, basically, he's saying. So again, Upanishad here, the word appears in the verse, means referred to a secret doctrine, something very confidential, science, very esoteric. Although we will see, you know, even if we want to think of the Upanishads as such, which of course they are, in our particular tradition, and this starts to glimpse as how our tradition, in one sense, with all respect, goes beyond the Upanishads, not beyond, but over the head of the Upanishads. Srotam api Upanishadam duri harikatam vritam mahaprabhu will say. Like, that place where the Upanishad can take you, that's far from where Harikatha can take you. And Harikatha in this case will refer mostly to Bhagavad Katha. We know the famous story that the Upanishads are. And when I say Bhagavad Katha, you ultimately mean Vrindavan. And we know that the Upanishads are trying to be born in Vrindavan as gopis. So at this point in Shastra's Smedas, speaking, the personified Shruti is trying to enter the Vraja Lila. That place where nobody knows one single Upanishadic statement, if you will. You cannot ask the Vrajavasis, okay. One, only one, tell me. But all the Upanishads want to enter there. So in this way we can start to glimpse that possibly this verse is referring to some group which is below the reach of the Vrajavasis. There is a place for that interpretation, we will see. And again, Guru is mentioned here in the equation. Guru, who is like the sun. And I think it's important that every time we read these sections in the Shastra, the Guru will teach you, the Guru will enlighten you, will share revealed knowledge. We should understand, or we should immediately include in our mind, whatever the word Guru appears, that word immediately implies disciple also. For the Guru to be there and for the Guru to impart something means there is someone else on the other side. There is a student, as my Guru Maharaj likes to say. You cannot have a teacher without a student. How much of a teacher you are if you have never had any students in your life. Say, I'm a teacher. How many students do you have? Oh, zero. I never had any student. Okay, so you're a teacher. Yes. Or you say, I'm a student. Who is your teacher? I never had any teacher. I'm a student. How can you be a student without a teacher? So this is like a self-dependent interaction between the two. So whenever Shastra is saying the Guru is speaking about there is someone who is supposed to be a disciple there for that the equation to happen. So in other words, when we hear about the things, we should think also about not only where is the Guru and how nice is Guru, but how much do I'm doing my homework as a disciple? Where I am as a disciple. Okay, Guru is there. He's like the sun. Great. But if I enter into a cave, sun can be shining outside, but I'm not seeing a single ray of it. So where I'm looking as a disciple, how much I'm doing my 50% part of the equation for the whole joint work to give the result. So the point is, we should do our homework so whatever Sri Guru is giving will be properly understood by us. It's not enough that the Guru is like the sun. You have to get out of the cave and face the sun and do something with those rays, basically. Like the other day, we were sharing in, I think, in Bulgaria. The Guru will share divine knowledge, and you may have questions to the Guru, but you will have to find the answers to your questions by applying yourself in practice whatever you're hearing from the Guru. So Guru is telling you something. What do you do with that thing that he's giving you? depending on what you do, you will be able to find a real answer to the question. If not, the guru is sharing the divine knowledge, but for you will be only information. You can just be inquiring from a place of intellectual curiosity. There is some itchy sensation in your intellect and you have many questions. But if there is not commitment with the source of that revelation and you then do your homework applying that into practice, there you won't be able to really find the answer, basically. So that, and that's interesting. I don't want to go into details there, but when you analyze, I will say, three of the main verses that define the guru in Shastra, not to say the three main verses, all of them speak about the disciple immediately. Which are the qualities of the guru? Which are the qualities of the disciple? So which could be those three verses? Prabhupada, help. Three most famous verses in Shastra that define guru and also by implication of the disciples' qualities.
Tadvidhi.
One is that one. So let's go to that one second. Tadvidhi pranipatena pariprasnena sivaya padekshantite jnanam jnaninas tattvadarshinaha. Bhagavad Gita 4:34. They're saying the guru is tattvadarshin and jnani. He has knowledge and he's a seer of truth. So he has both theory and divine eye, realization. But the very first thing is saying what the verse is saying is what the disciples should be doing. If you want to attain that, pranipat pariprasna seva. No, you should surrender, you should be humble, and you should render service. That's it. The secret key to obtain divine knowledge. Surrender, humility, service. It was like, oh, really? That's the real currency in that market? Yes. So my point is, yeah, the guru is defined there, but mostly the disciple is defined. Because you have to be disciple. If not, you won't be asking, where is the guru? Where is the guru? Or maybe the guru is here. But if the disciple is not there, if we as disciples have not yet arrived, you won't be surrounded by whole paramparas, but still asking, where is guru? Where is guru? And they are asking, and the ether will reply back, where is the disciple? Second verse.
I don't remember how it begins.
Tasmat gurum.
Yes, tasmat gurum.
Prapadita jignasya shriya uttamam sabde pare chanishnatam ramanyu pashamashrayam. So that's another famous one from the Bhagavatam, which is basically a parallel verse, we could say. Which also say tasmat gurum prapadita. Immediately speaks about surrender to the guru again, pranipat. Pari prabhadinta. Jignyasu Shriya Uttamam, again speaking, what's the disciple supposed to be? Should be Jignyasu Shriya Uttamam, should be passionately inquiring in the direction of the highest good, the highest welfare. And then Shabdi Parichanishnatam Brahmanyu Pashamashraya. The guru is familiar, drenched in Shastra, practicing that, having insight, can fully take shelter into Upasama, tranquility, sense control. And again, first the disciple is defined, interestingly. Who the guru is about, what disciple is about. You cannot define one without the other. So in this way, Shastra is presenting the two of them simultaneously always to make the case you cannot have one without the other. And which will be a third verse? Upanishadic. Let's go to the Upanishad.
Yes, I'm trying to remember also how that...
Tadvijnanartham.
Tadvijnanartham.
Sagurum evamigachet. Samit Pani Shrotriyam Brahmanishtam.
Okay. Thanks
for that. So our Upanishadic teacher is confirming that. That's the other one. So which again is again like a similar version of the other two. Tad Vijnanartham Sabgurume Bhavigach. Immediately starts to define what the disciple is supposed to, what's the motivation of the disciple, to be inquiring into the direction of real wisdom, real purpose. You then must accept the guru. And Samit Pani. You have to bring the wood for sacrifice. No? This Vedic, all your symbology, like sacrifice, basically. So, you have to be willing to surrender. It's another way of saying pranipat or prapadita. And then, shrotriyam brahmanistam. At the end, two words for the guru. What's the qualification of the guru? Shrotriyam brahmanistam. Like jnani tattva darshin or sabde parichanishnatam. He's familiar with shruti and he's fixed in Brahman, in the Absolute. But two words for the, I mean, not to downplay that, just to make the point how much the role of the disciple is played in this connection. Mm-hmm. So I just want to stop there for a minute, because this verse speaking about the guru, not about the disciple in this case, but we should add those lines in our own mind. Let's go to Sridhar Swami's commentary, 1040, Bhagavad. Okay. Sridhar Swami says, in his Bhavartha Deepika, because of such knowledge, they are freed, because of this knowledge just described. And the question may be, who? Who are freed? Those who properly see you. And this seeing is not superficial. That is exactly what Brahma means to express with the phrase Him, Krishna, the personal soul of all souls. And how is this seeing performed? With this, how do you say in English? Like superlative something. It's a word in English. Mm-hmm. Okay, with the superlative special eye, that is the knowledge obtained from a guru who is a sun. Again, the idea of sun is sun comes and the sun itself shows everything. Even the sun shows itself to you. I mean, you cannot see the sun without the sun. And if you never saw the sun and you are doubtful, you always lived in a cave, so you are accustomed to see everything with candles, and I tell you, let's see the sun today. And you say, okay, let me bring the candle, because you never saw anything without the candle. I say, no, you don't need the candle. You say, you're joking. How everything has to be seen. No. How do I know I will see the sun? You will know when you see the sun. So this kind of self-evidence, self-revealing type of knowledge that comes from guru, when, again, disciple is there. Well, the disciple is doing his part. When the guru is doing his part, his her part, the proper mixing of these two ingredients will give the result of revelation, epiphany. Not only information, but transformation. So there are different levels, as I mentioned, of meaning in this verse. So we will start by sharing the most devotional meaning, which is the one that is given by Jiva Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, and Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur will interestingly connect this verse more with the Bhakti Mishra Jnani, someone who practices Jnana but mixes Jnana with Bhakti, and that may create some particular results, as my Guru Maharaj before mentioned, Santarasa and so on. So to begin with, I would say something interesting before we will go now to the more devotional meanings, interpretations, and they will be speaking about reaching prem and experiencing divine love for Krishna, which is what Brahma is feeling invited to, if you will, more and more. But before developing this eye of prem, prema netra, sometimes called prema chakshu, we have to develop what's called shastra chakshu. As a foundation, Shastra Chakshu means to become accustomed to see reality through the eyes of the scripture, to the eyes of revelation, as we say these days, to have proper conception of reality, to see everything with Krishna in the center, and we will receive this information from above. Generally, it's not that we wake up one day and realize, oh, Krishna is the center of everything. We don't even have a clue without revelation who Krishna is. No, I don't think that, I don't know, even if you take one LSD and you have some like psychedelic, I saw someone playing the flute, you won't get to those limits, no? Because this is beyond limits. As Srila Samara said, even in your wildest imagination, is limited. If you try to imagine the most extreme wild thing, do not do it, just in case. But even that's limited. That won't reach beyond certain parameters. And Vrindavan and Krishna Lila is way beyond those. So before, first we have to develop this Shastra Chakshu, this act of Shastra, that will educate our seeing, our appreciation of reality, before we obtain Prema Chakshu, the act of love. First we have to obtain the Gyananjana, as we pronounce before. And then we can obtain Premanjana, no? Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gyananjana Salagya. So first we offer pranam to Sri Guru who is giving us the, how do you say, the salve of ointment, whatever, of knowledge through which we can see. Because before that, basically we were blind. That is the definition given in the verse. So first we need that. That's what this verse is mentioning. Go sit at the feet of Sri Guru and hear. Like Srila Narasimha Maharaj will say, when the wise men speak, wise men hear. So you don't need to be speaking to be wise man. But if a wise man is speaking, you can be a wise man by hearing. It's not that you need also to be speaking at the same time. So you can also be wise. To hear is pretty much wise. Learn to hear. So first we have to obtain this particular ointment. No? Gyananjana. The ointment of knowledge which will provide us with Shastra Chakshu, which will teach us how to see reality according to the lens of Shastra, revelation. And then that Gyananjana will in turn invoke Primanjana, like Brahma himself says in Brahma Stuti. Primanjana bhakti, Primanjana churita bhakti vilochanena. So he's referring to those who has their eyes tinged with the salve or ointment of Prem, in this case. Sadaiva santari dayesu vilokayanti, and they will see you everywhere. So first Gyananjana, then Premanjana. If you go to the ointment market, go to Loi Bazaar to get some of those salves, there is some sequence for that. Although in Loi Bazaar they may want to tell, we have Premanjana, it's cheaper than anyway, so you can get it. But if you go to at the feet of Sri Guru, which is the bona fide market, if you will, there is some sequence to the different ointments to be applied to our eyes, if you will. So this verse is speaking about, if we want to take this verse as referring to highest goal of bhakti, they were speaking about transcending material existence, and as we spoke these days, as my Guru Maharaj said yesterday, a bhakta is not, Gaudiya Vaishnava is not interested in any type of mukti, what to speak, Sayuja mukti, but not even the other ones, types of liberation. The devotee is not interested in that because bhakti is post-liberated condition. So if you get a glimpse of what really real bhakti means, and that starts to happen at Ruchi, as Mahaprabhu shows in the fourth verse of Shikshasaka, you lose taste for anything else. Although you are still in the world, you don't care for anything else without bhakti. And you see bhakti everywhere, opportunities for service everywhere, as we say the other day. Potential paraphernalia to be engaged in bhakti everywhere. Every atom is potential paraphernalia to be engaged in bhakti. And Mahaprabhu says, Mamajan Mani Janmanishvare. I don't care for samsara. I don't care for janmani coming over and over again here, as long as I have the chance of rendering high to ki bhakti. No problem. So we could say from the perspective of this verse speaking about bhakti, when it is said, they transcend material existence, if that applies to a devotee who doesn't care for that, that means they enter into the post-liberated life of bhakti, which means transcending material existence. It doesn't mean that they care for that, but they obtain that as a byproduct. It's not a devotee, I want to get free from samsara, moksha lagu to plead. That's insignificant at one point. And as we mentioned, in bhakti, you can even remain in this body and you are considered quite beyond the conditions of this body, as we mentioned. I think, yesterday we defined this word amrita. So which was the meaning of amrita? Do you remember? Sorry? Deathlessness, yeah, immortality, and also we connected something else with amrita. Yeah.
Sweetness, like nectar.
No. Also, that's something else. He, because of whom his devotees do not have any more material life, which is characterized by death. No? So basically the idea is, he who ends the material life for his devotees, in other words, implying They are already beyond samsara, already still embodied here now.
Sweet immortality.
We want some drawing by Saragrahi about that. I know it sounds pretty abstract, but you will find a way of depicting sweet immortality. Positive and progressive immortality. Well, we say yes, that one yesterday also. Yeah, we don't only care for mere immortality, but there has to be something to be to do in immortality, because if not, we may go crazy, and we may prefer to remain here. At least here, I have something to do. No, but they say no. In immortality, there is plenty of things to do. There is much more necessity, as we say the other day, than here. Radha and Krishna Mahaprabhu had much more necessities, because out of love, the necessity we can perceive here without love. So, interestingly, in this verse, the word to refer, for referring to this material existence or samsara, is bhava. Bhava. Bhava.
Bhava.
Short. Yeah. Short A. Bhava. I'm doing it long there?
Yeah.
Bhava.
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 Yeah.
Okay. I remember the correction from last year. I actually want to make that point. Because bhava with long A, bhava, refers to ecstatic emotion, and non-ecstatic emotion will be shorter than that. Rigupa liked that one. No? He corrected me live, and he's doing that again. And I'm grateful to that for him. He's my Sanskrit tutor here. So bhava is material existence with short A, and from that we go to the long A with bhava. The expanded sense of existence that comes in divine love. And from there, if you want, we can go to Mahabhava, which is the Mahabhava Swarupini, Sri Radha, the personification of bhakti. So we can go from different notions of this word, Bhava, 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 Mahabhava, and so on. So there's a different idea of the same word, which can refer to material existence, or which can refer to exactly its opposite. Even the word samsara sometimes has been rendered as such. No? Samsara generally means repeated cycle of birth and death, but sometimes some of our acharyas have described it as samsara, full essence. No? So that's a samsara here. If we want to take bhava as referring to the both possibilities, you can also pick one for samsara. So Brajavasis seem to be in samsara. They consider themselves, they ask Krishna, which will be our next birth in this world? For sure we are in samsara. I mean, we are attached, uncivilized guys, attached to cows, family, house. So we are sure we will continue traveling here. So what will be our next birth? And Krishna said, you will remain attached to the same thing you are attached now. More. And they say, oh, great. They have no problem with samsara, because they are in samsara. They are in the full religion, the full essence of existence. So that's some play of words to show how this verse can refer to this Braja Bhav that Brahma is after. Remember, in the context, Brahma is having something, pointing to something as a goal. And this idea is further confirmed by Sanatana Goswami in his Brihad Vaishnav Toshni. So let's go to his purport. When Srila Sanatana Goswami says, again, showing this verse in the light of Sudha Bhakti, he says, paraphrasing Brahma, 10:53, by proper knowledge of you, by bhakti, they become liberated from samsara easily. So he makes this point, by proper knowledge of you, and he refers immediately by bhakti, in other words, bhakti is a type of knowledge. We already mentioned that's the keen of knowledge. So they get liberated from samsara easily. No? By other types of knowledge, you may get liberated from samsara, not easily. Klesho dikatarasti sam abhyakta shakta chita sam Krishna says in Gita. Those who want to attain mukti by embracing jnana, not bhakti, they may obtain that, but that's so difficult. So difficult. But your devotees, even they do not want that, and they obtain that easily. But they do not care for that. So the knowledge about you, that's bhakti in itself. There is a type of knowledge which comes as a byproduct of bhakti. Vasudevi Bhagavati bhakti yoga prayojita janaya tyasu vairagyam jnanam chayadahaitukam. So by rendering bhakti to Vasudev, jnan and vairagya counts as, how do you say in English, concomitant factors, mm-hmm. say byproducts. Mm-hmm. So there is a type of knowledge which comes as a result of engaging in bhakti, mm-hmm. a deeper knowledge, mm-hmm. intuitive knowledge, if you will. Mm-hmm. And also there is a knowledge that is part of bhakti, if you want to think of what Brahma is saying here. He's speaking of Krishna in terms of Aishvarya Gyan. You are God. You are the divine in so many ways. That will be the foundation for the Madhurya Gyan project, for knowing Krishna Gyan only in terms of Madhurya, only in terms of sweetness and intimacy. First, you are God. And because you are God, now you appear as a boy. Oh, that's especially sweet. Of course, every boy is especially sweet. We have some first-hand experience here. But what if the boy is God? Or if the girl is God? That makes especially charming. I don't want to intimidate the parents, suggesting maybe your child is God. So I don't know, how will I treat him now? I mean, I will see him still as my child. I don't care if he's God. That's parent psychology. He may be God. We may know about that later when he becomes adult. He will tell all those things. He's my child now. So Brahma is establishing all this here through his own epiphany, through the very insights that he has just received some minutes ago and keeps receiving after every single verse. Sanatana Goswami then says, because the knowledge of Atma is included in the knowledge of the Lord, by knowledge of the Lord, one easily, Eva, cross the ocean of samsara, which is produced by Atma Gyan. He connects this. If you know yourself as Atma, you can transcend samsara. That's the point made here, basically. But if you know Bhagavan, which that includes the knowledge of the Atma, so that makes you transcend samsara easily. Again, even if you don't care for that. That's included in the packaging. That's what we mean. Bhakti is a post-liberated status. You care so little for mukti that you may be already liberated, but you don't know it. You don't know about that. That's the case of the Vrajavasis. That means you are post-liberated. It means you are liberated, but you don't have a clue about that. And you think you are a conditioned soul traveling in samsara, but all in Narada Muni and so many sages are like bowing your head to you. But you think, I'm just entangled here. And I want to remain entangled here. When they ask Krishna, which is my next life? They were praying, hopefully the same thing that we are going through now. Hopefully, hopefully. When Krishna showed, same thing. Godhari. So that's the standard here. That means to be post-liberated. You care so little about liberation that you are already liberated, but you think I'm entangled. You don't care for liberation. You care only for that entanglement, which actually is life in Leela, at least in connection to how Braja Leela seems to the untrained eye. It seems entanglement. But they are beyond Vaikuntha. Sanatana Goswami concludes saying, what is the nature of this devotional knowledge? They know positively you, though the control of all jivas, as dearer than themselves. So again, this points to the Brajabha. That's the type of knowledge. How do they know Krishna? He's more dear than ourselves. And of course, at the end of the Brahma Stuti, Sukadeva Goswami will make this famous statement that actually in this world, most of the people, that's pretty blunt, how to say, bold, what he says. He says, in this world, nobody loves anyone, he will say. In this world, he means someone in material consciousness. They love everyone, but actually they are only loving themselves through those people. Technically speaking. Although they may say externally so many flattering things, but the real backdrop of that is they're just loving themselves, trying to at least, through whatever crosses their path. And of course here we have the exact opposite of that. The Vrajavasis is considering Krishna as dearer to themselves and to everything else. So that's the standard of knowledge that here Brahma refers to. By receiving proper devotional knowledge, you, as my Guru Maharaj likes to say, you establish the proper object of ideal affection, which is not you, which is not anyone else apart from Krishna. And by putting him on the throne, you will actually be loving everyone else in the best possible way. Although I know it may sound strong, but that's how it works. This is what this is standard of the spiritual world. Everyone loves Krishna the most, and then comes everything else. So when in the Brahma Vimohan Lila, when Krishna himself expanded as the calves and the friends, after a whole year, Balaram started looking and saying, there is something weird here, because the parents are loving their children more than Krishna. That's not normal. I mean, in this world, that's normal. You should love your kid more than even God, maybe. That's not Vrindavan. Vrindavan Balaram saying, how the parents can love their kids more than Krishna? This is not normal. How the cows can love their calves more than Krishna? And Balaram himself is feeling, I'm feeling more love, or at least equal love, even if you want, equal love to these calves and friends. I'm feeling as if the same level of love that I feel for Krishna. What's going on? This is not normal. This shouldn't be happening. Everyone should be loving Krishna the most first. That's the standard there. And of course, all those forms were Krishna, actually. That's why they were feeling like that. But that's the point. Real knowledge will show. That's the first commandment, right? In Christianity. How do you say in English? First commandment? Thou, something with thou, right? Thou shalt love the Lord above everyone else or something. And that doesn't mean you are loving everyone else less than what you are doing now. Actually, that's the real love you can show to anyone by connecting them to their source. Anyhow, let's go to Jiva Goswami's purport, and then we will conclude with Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So Jiva Goswami also continues in the line of Sanatana Goswami, showing a more Sudha Bhakti reading of this verse, if you will. And he says, paraphrasing Brahma, by knowing you as described in previous verses, people easily become liberated from samsara, as if it were water in a calf's hoof print, you see. They realize you as the highest object of prem, as described in the previous verse. So Jiva Goswami starts establishing this point. You are the highest object of love. So proper knowledge received from Guru and Shastra points to that. To actually becoming aware of who is the real object of love. It's not that someone else can be the real object of love. You may try, it won't work, because the only possible object of ultimate love, first and foremost, is God. So proper knowledge will teach you that. And when you learn that lesson, samsara, which is described in different ways, like a forest fire, or in this case, like an ocean, you have the watery example, the fiery example, both of them are like, the idea is, how do you say in English, inescapable. If you're in a forest fire, imagine now that it has not been raining here in Chaitanya Dham for lots of time, and the forest fire comes, and, ooh, what to do? And you're in an island, I mean, you jump into the water, you have water close. But if you're in the midst of the forest fire, it's like, how can I get out from here? Or if you are in the middle of the ocean, means there's, I cannot see nor beginning nor end to this. But the famous example is that ocean, unsurmountable, becomes like the water contained in a calf whose hoof print. So how difficult is to go to cross over a calf's hoof print? It's like, so that's the result of proper knowledge. That's the idea, no? That thing which seemed impossible to transcend is already transcended immediately, basically. Jiva Goswami then says, the guru who teaches this is compared to the sun, unlike other instructors who are like lamps in comparison. So there are different types of instructors. So here this verse is pointing, go to a guru, a sun-like guru, not to a lamp-like guru. There are different gurus. And of course, all of them are venerable in their own degree, but there are degrees of shedding light. And the very word guru means that. The syllable gu means darkness, Anuru denotes, a dispeller of that. So Guru means dispeller of darkness. And who is dispeller of darkness par excellence here in this world? The sun. The experience that we can have from material point of view is there's no dispeller of darkness such as the sun. And the Guru is, of course, much more than a sun, but somehow we have to compare with something we have experience of here. So, a Guru is someone who eradicates darkness. And sun means complete eradication of darkness. In other words, if you stand in front of the sun, there's no more darkness. Again, if you remain in the cave, you don't do your part as a disciple. Sun is shining outside, but you just see darkness. But if you do your part as a disciple and just face the sun like Guru and stand in front of him or her, which means approach him, which means surrender to him. That's an interesting point. In the translation to the verse Tadvidi Pranipatena of the Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada, he translates Pranipat, which means surrender to a Guru. He translates as approach a Guru. Pranipat means approach a Guru, but actually Pranipat means surrender. But the idea means real approaching of a Guru is surrender to the Guru. If you are not surrendered, you are not close to your Guru, no matter how close you are for the picture, and you appear in every retreat picture next to him, and you may recite in close physical proximity, that doesn't mean internal proximity. That will be given us by Saranagati. So, we have to approach the Guru, means we have to surrender to the Guru, and that will, the closer we get to him, the closer you get to the sun. Of course, if you get too close to the sun, you may get burnt. If you want to live in the sun, you have to acquire a sun-like body, a fire body made of fire, which will be for us Siddhadeha, if you will, following the analogy. You want to reside eternally with your Guru, you have to become of that same status, if you will, of that same substance. You have to be as pure and surrender, entering to the fire as he or she has done. You have to become Guru, basically. Although you may not officially have disciples, but in one sense, at the end of the day, Guru and disciple are synonymous. Real disciple is Guru and real Guru is disciple. And Jiva Goswami says an example of this type of sun-like Guru is Sukadeva Goswami. Because of instructions like this, and he quotes one verse from that comes at the end of the Brahma Stuti, where Sukadeva says, "You should know Krishna to be the original soul of all living entities." He's telling that to Parikshit. So because of sun-like instructions like this, you should know Krishna to be this, very clearly, very specifically, very direct. And for someone who obtains such a knowledge, who exposes, surrenders oneself to such a guru, again, samsara becomes a joke, if you will. It's like, it becomes reduced to almost nothing. You even forgot there was something called samsara, basically. And Jiva Goswami concludes his commentary by quoting another verse from the Bhagavatam, second chapter of 10th canto, well-known one, which gives this analogy of the hoof print of the calf. So I'll read the verse quickly. These are prayers, the prayers by the devas when Krishna is in the womb. O lotus-eyed Lord, by concentrating one's meditation on your lotus feet, which are the reservoir of all existence, and by accepting those lotus feet as the boat by which to cross the ocean of nescience, one follows in the footsteps of Mahajanas, great saints. By this simple process, one can cross the ocean of nescience? Whatever, you know the idea. As easily as one steps over the hoof print of a calf. So again, this analogy is given, crossing the ocean of samsara. You need a certain boat. Sometimes these examples also are given. This human body is the boat. Guru is the captain of the boat. He has the hat that you had, captain of the boat. The favorable winds are the advice from Shastra and the sadhus. And you are like one, marine inside the boat, and the only thing you are expected to do is do not jump from the boat. Just trust the captain and the whole crew that you will be taken safe to safe land. to home, if you will. You have to have trust and confidence, because at one point of the journey, it's like, will we arrive or not? What's going on? I don't see any sign of anything. Srila Siddhanta gives that example sometimes, you know, giving this classical sequence of a journey. In the beginning of a journey, similar to what Vishwanath Chakravartaku will say with Utsahamayi, you know, when you begin bhakti, it's like everything is ecstatic and nice and beautiful, and it is. But the process starts to densify, if you will, and it starts to become a little bit more complex. The other day I saw one video from a Trappist monk that was sent to me. He was describing very Madhura Kadambini-like terms, the journey are like digging work. So he was illustrating on one whiteboard, like a digging and different layers of digging. So a spiritual journey like digging. So the first digging is relatively easy. Okay, it's working, it's nice. You want to go to a second layer, it's like, oh, it's harder, it's not working. And you have to, and the deeper you go, the harder it gets. No? And you may be discouraged by that. No? So Srila Siddhanta will say, similarly, when you begin the journey, the devotional project, he says, you're like in a boat. Not like, okay, let's speak about crossing the ocean. Again, crossing the ocean is not the goal, but to reach the other side. At the beginning of the journey, everyone is in the boat and everyone is happy. The journey is starting and we all take pictures of ourselves beginning the journey and we greet our family members on the shore, see you soon, and everyone is like excited because you are beginning something. Whenever you begin something new, you are excited just because it is new. And when you arrive to the destiny of your journey, you are excited. Oh, we've seen land there. We're arriving. Beginning and end. But what happens in between? Srila Siddhanta will say sometimes you will be in the middle of the ocean and you look west, east, north, south, no signal of anything. No symptoms of you are arriving anywhere. You don't see anymore the original land you departed from. And you don't have no sense of orientation even. I am moving? Is the boat moving at all? I'm going in the right direction? Maybe I should jump from the boat and go back swimming too. I'm closer to the original land than to the destiny land. All the things can happen in the middle of the journey. And that's why it's so crucial to trust the captain, you know, who will show pictures of all the travels he has gone, come back and forth. I know where I'm going. I've returned many times. Trust me, here are the pictures. There are other more mature marines that will tell, yeah, we accompany the captain many journeys, so here we are, trust him. And paper winds are coming, and the boat is strong enough, we won't sink. All these like doubts that will invade us, and we may conclude the most stupid thing possible, which is, maybe I jump myself to the ocean and just swim back, like if that's happening. And like if there are no sharks and crocodiles waiting for you there. In the ocean. So anyhow, a little bit this analogy that, but if you take proper shelter of bhakti, again, the ocean becomes the water in the calf footprint. So the whole journey that seems unending and impossible becomes so possible. You are already there in one sense. That's what our guru will say. By bhakti, in one sense, you are already doing those things that you will like to do for eternity. You will like for eternity to sing, to glorify Krishna, to serve, to chant. You are already doing that. And you want to do that forever. So you are already having the chance to do those things that you want to do for eternity. So basically that sounds like post-liberation. You are stop thinking about when I will get to that point, to that place. Of course we need to distill that and still purify some sections, but already we are going in that direction. It may take a few little time, but already there. We should have that confidence also. Like Guru Maharaj quotes Vishnu Yang Swami, like he will say, the journey we have gone till we met our guru from time without beginning is way longer than the journey we have to do from where we are now till the ultimate goal. Even if the ultimate goal seems like, so far, the journey that you already went through to be where you are now is like this. I'm putting that for the camera. And the journey you have to do now is like this. As long as it seems, it's like this. So if you were able to do this, how you cannot do this? And with proper guidance and favorable winds, you did this without that, you can do this. I mean, come on. Come on, Sarabhai.
Yeah, I try.
Come on. Don't lose hope. There's hope. Anyhow, some words in connection to Jiva Goswami's commentary. Let's conclude with Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, and we will close the session here. A few minutes just, and we are done. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, interestingly, he will read this verse in through a different lens. And that will lend itself to the next verses also, interestingly. Till now we approach this verse more in connection to, okay, this is speaking about Sudha Bhakti. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur will connect this verse more with Bhakti Mishra Gyan, someone who is practicing the path of knowledge depicted by Shankaracharya, who mixes Gyan with Bhakti so to attain some goal. How we can read this verse as such? Well, this verse is speaking about Upanishads, which is a pretty much Gyani-like section of Shastra, favorite of them. This verse speaking about the world as unreal, and okay, we interpret that as temporary, as we explained the other day, but Gyani will say it's actually unreal, mitya. Or they are trying to obtain mukti, transcend samsara. Again, a bhakta is not trying to that, but Gyani really has longing for that, and so on. So in this connection, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur will say the following. He says that the gist of this verse is, even the worshippers of your feature as Nirvishesh Brahman, the impersonal form of the Absolute, if they get the good fortune of devotion to your personal form as Paramatma, develop faith in you and attain the status of Santa Bhaktas. So that's the beginning of his commentary. Even if someone who is focused on Brahman, the impersonal Brahman, by some good fortune, somehow they get some connection with you in some way or another, although they have their jnana samskars, by connection with bhakti, they may be inclined towards your form as Paramatma, which already is a more personalized conception of God than Brahman. And that may give them the attainment of Santa Bhakti. And he continues saying, thus, Brahma says here, with devotion they see you as Paramatma, who has a charming, handsome personal form that delights the eyes, mind, and heart. They realize that Krishna has all the qualities described in the previous verses, and that he is the super soul present in all living beings. This is also described in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 2.5.18. It says, the mindset directed at Krishna as Paramatma is called Santarati. So those who address Krishna as Paramatma, who feel more inclined towards that feature of the Absolute, even while addressing Krishna, those are the ones who have Santarati. They have more inclination to contemplating that, Guru Maharaj likes to call, beatific form of the Absolute. The question may be asked, says Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, how does this take place? And Brahma answers, the spiritual master is like the sun. By studying the Upanishads under him and obtaining his mercy, one attains the proper vision to see Krishna as Paramatma and the knowledge to cross over the ocean of illusions known as material existence. So he's mentioning, again, presenting all this in this particular context. You have a guru who will enlighten you in this particular perspective, that will teach you to see Krishna as Paramatma, which is, again, it's not our take, but there is place for that, and you will receive those particular lens or samskars coming from that particular guru, and that will give us a result attainment of Santa Bhakti, which can bestow eternal residence in Vaikuntha, and you will have that particular type of inner contemplation and therefore transcend samsara. Let's conclude with a few words by Balabhacharya, a few words that connect this with the next verses. And with this, I'm concluding. So we have to add some spice to the masala. It's okay. Balavacharya is saying, having described the Swarup of Bhagavan in previous verses, now Brahma says, remember, Brahma here is in a situation where his Braja Bhava is blossoming. No, his attraction to serve Krishna in Vrindavan is blossoming. So the point is, whatever is not Braja Bhava for Brahma, that's like, he's not interested in that. Although he's speaking about that, but he's not interested in that. So having described the Swarup of Bhagavan, or the nature of Krishna, as he's realizing it, now Brahma says in his blossoming Braja Bhava, those who revere you in the way mentioned henceforth are bonkers. You understand the word bonkers? It's kind of crazy people. So basically, according to Balavacharya, Brahma is saying, employing here, those who worship you as something different from the Krishna I'm seeing now, they are crazy. Like a subjective expression, like, how can they worship another form apart from this beautiful cowherd boy I have in front of my eyes? Even Paramatma, but to speak of Brahman. And Balavacharya concludes saying, after Brahma implies this, this is the scheme in the next five verses too. No? So in the next five verses, the scheme, which is the scheme, Brahma will start to basically criticize those who consider this unique, charming, hyper-real human form of Krishna as mithya or as false. And instead, they chase after, especially, Brahman, the non-differentiated aspect of the Absolute. So those who go for Brahman and instead consider your ultimate form as mithya or false, they are bonkers, they are crazy people. So very ecstatically, Brahma will express the next five verses in this connection. But for that, see you in Poland. We will continue speaking about that in a week or so in Poland in a few days. So we will conclude here. I don't know if there are any questions before finishing. Any comments, something you might like to share? Nora?
It was mentioned a few days ago by the verse that the one who knows the truth about Krishna's appearance will not take birth again in this world. So what does it mean exactly?
Well, of course there are many levels to explain that, but in brief I will say that verse, which is ninth verse of fourth chapter of the Gita, Janma karma chame divyam banjubiti tattvataha tyaktva deham punarjanma naiti mamiti svarjana. Krishna himself is saying, the one who knows, and he qualifies that saying, the one who knows that my birth and my janma and my karma, my birth and my activities are divya, are divine, when they leave this body, they do not return here. So the idea is, the ones who know the divine nature, that's the word divya is so crucial. It's not just knowing the nature of Krishna's birth, there's no more birth, but going, knowing that his birth, as my Guru Maharaj explained yesterday, when he was asked, should we say the appearance day of someone or the birthday and so on? Technically speaking, Krishna is not taking birth as we think of it here. So we may speak of it in terms of avirbhav or pradurbhav, like manifestation, self-manifestation, because his form is eternally existing. In this world we see a form taking birth, then changing, and before that birth, the form that jiva had another form, but Krishna has, his form is eternal. So the idea is, to those who know the nature of Krishna's birth, do not take any birth anymore, is those who understand that he's actually not taking birth. No? He's, of course, doing that in the context of Leela, with a certain divine purpose, and those who know all those things no longer take birth, because they understand which is the purpose of Krishna's manifestation, will take advantage of that, when taking advantage of Krishna's descent, avatar, if you will, divine descent, the result of that will be no more birth, as an even secondary byproduct, even. Because for us as Gaudias, that's not even so enticing, you say? So attractive, like, hey, well, we will leave samsara. I mean, or Vaishnavas are like, so what? So But the real goal of understanding Krishna's descent and activities is to enter in touch with his lila as performed on earth, to be charmed by hearing and remembering that lila, and ultimately to enter that lila forever in the spirit of service. Okay, something else? Okay, we conclude here with this, and thank you very much to all of you for coming today and all these days in this beautiful Finnish experience again. Hope to see you again very soon. Some of you in Poland, some of you in Finland, some of you somewhere. I'm traveling quite a lot, so see you somewhere in the map. Srila Gurudev ki jai, Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jai, Sri Sat Bhujmurang Dev ki jai. Shri Hari Nam Prabhu ki jai, Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Shri Brahma Stuti ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Pramanand Hari Bol.